Hey, everybody, welcome to the Juke Joint, episode number 8. Hanging out with myself and the one and only Jacob Whitmer. Oh, I think you're the one and only. You're the only Jacob Whitmer that I know, so.
I've been told there's probably another Jacob Whitmer out there somewhere, but he's nowhere near as talented as I am.
Nowhere near as cool as you.
No, sorry, folks.
This Jacob Whitmer can only hope to be half the man that you are.
Exactly.
But
or it is even half the woman.
It is currently February 1st, which means it's the day before Groundhog Day, which means I am sitting myself down tomorrow and watching that movie.
Did you ever see that YouTube video that tried to calculate how long Bill Murray had been in that loop for?
I feel like I saw something like that forever ago, but I honestly don't remember.
They estimated that he had been in that Groundhog Day loop for about 65 years.
I partially hope that's true. I don't know. That would be a living hell, first of all.
Second well, I mean, because you're cursed to live the same. You pretty much live your entire life in purgatory at that point, don't you?
Yeah.
Like, just always living the same day again and again and again with nothing. Unceasing repetition. Doesn't matter how much you grow as a person, every day it resets and people instinctively are prepared for you to be an ass to them.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, so, and if people haven't seen that movie, first of all, go out and watch it.
Second of all, it's okay.
I don't want to ruin any surprises. I don't know. I find it entertaining just because it gets so obnoxious at one point, especially like towards like the middle.
Well, that's
it's just like
DOS is the curse of some Bill Murray movies. They do. They have the tendency to sometimes get obnoxious.
But anyways, yeah, it is wonderful day to do a podcast. Like Jacob said, kicking off the episode, we got a lot to talk about today. One thing I can tell he is super stoked on, and then I'm also pretty stoked on, because of all Beatles things.
Oh, yes.
This is probably one of my favorite things, but we'll get into that later.
We'll touch upon it. We'll touch upon it as time goes by. But
Yeah. But anyways, tell me about your week. I haven't talked to you for a while. What's going on?
This is the only time I'm ever going to allow this, because in other circumstances, I would find this topic profoundly boring.
I already know where you're going with this.
But the weather on my end.
I feel like you have a right to complain about it because
I've been trapped in my house now for the past 3 days. For those of you who don't know, a lot of the U.S. right now is stuck in what they're calling the polar vortex, which essentially means temperatures have dropped to an all-time low. And pretty much it's meant that for the past 3 days, I haven't been able to leave my house.
Are you snowed in, or is it just that cold?
It's literally that cold. Today I'm snowed in, but yeah. At the same time, it's like, if I wasn't snowed in, like, the entire road I live on would be nothing but an ice rink.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And it's not fun to drive in, so. But then it's weird, because, like, over the next week, it's supposed to get up to, like, the high 50s, so we're going to be getting like some spring temperatures here in a little bit, which is odd.
And then all that's going to melt off whatever's there anyways.
I know.
Which is going to be fun.
I'm more excited because it means I can finally shave off my beard.
Just let the warmth embrace your face.
Well, because that's the thing, is that in the winter I grow out my facial hair, what I call my facial hair, like to kind of warm me up a bit, but I really dislike having it. And now I can actually just shave it off for a little bit. So what about you? Do you have any non-weather related activities that you've been up to?
Nothing really exciting. I did the exciting adult thing this morning of my taxes, which was...
Oh God, yes, the taxes. That which, is beauty. Everyone loves taxes. We've gone from talking about the weather to talking about taxes. It's a fun episode this week. People are going to be like, oh, shit. I thought they couldn't get any better than last week when they talked about those competing Fire Festival
I couldn't hate them anymore, but just they
but
topped
man,
it.
But, man, they really, their banality has really just exceeded all expectations.
Join us next week when we talk just political commentary in the most, like, C-SPAN style.
And later today, we will be discussing the rise of the new C-21 bill. It's passing the House of Representatives in North Carolina.
But no, I had the honor of doing my taxes this morning, and this was difficult. I've done my taxes on my own for the past 3 or 4 years now that I've finally gotten old enough to know how to do them properly. And well, I guess been old enough to do it in the first place since I'm only 23. But it was an absolute nightmare because doing my taxes in college sucked, but usually I had a pretty good return on it because it was like education benefits and credits and all this stuff. But this time around, I have the state of West Virginia like $200, and I'm only getting like $300 back from the federal government. I'm like, oh my god, this is terrible.
So you're not getting a refund, is what I'm hearing from you.
I'm getting like, I think about $350 after it's all paid for, but then I'm going to turn around and put that back on my credit card just to
just to pay the rent for another month.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first refund check that I've had where it's been just kind of like, I wouldn't say it's wasted because paying off that credit card would be awesome, but like, I can't like use it to like go out and buy something cool, you know? But
I haven't had to face the gloom of taxes yet because I haven't ever had an actual real job yet, but I know that there's no chance in hell I'll ever be able to actually do them competently. I'm going to have to find an accountant or something.
Not endorsement or anything, just to make that noted, but TurboTax, I use that this round.
Oh, use TurboTax. Hey, have you heard of TurboTax?
I heard, because everybody keeps talking about it, I'm thinking like, well, I used a couple of those services in the past, and like, they work, but the U.S. tax system is so damn complicated. I mean, the amount of forms that you need, or potentially could need, to file your taxes, and you happen to miss one of those, I mean, you could be screwed. You know? But
not as screwed if you would be if you didn't have TurboTax. Apply now for 0% APR financing.
And the freaking $80 fee they charge me to file both of my federal and state taxes, but at least I don't have to worry about it.
Yes.
It was a lot easier than other things I've used, and I'm willing to fork out more money that I wouldn't have gotten back anyways. So, oh well, yeah. So that's the exciting thing I did today. More student loan paperwork. Just being an adult. So what I've done this week. I've just been an adult this week.
He's adulting like no one's business.
Hey, I'm a pro. I've got my nice long sleeve shirt on. It's a nice cold day. Not as cold as it is out there.
Oh, is it a nice cold for you?
Hey, not to talk about the weather.
All the people in LA are like bombing around because it's raining.
I saw a couple people I follow on Twitter were like jokingly very depressed about the rain, and I'm like, damn, at least it's not like -40. It's like the worst it's gotten here is like some gloomy skies as it is every day, and then like 45-50 degrees.
I've never wanted.
So I say you got to come to the West Coast. It's pretty mild out here.
Well, if I can, you know, crawl my way with my pickaxe to the airport, then.
If the plane can even get off the ground without being frozen to the runway,
probably we'll not. It's one of those things like the pilot walks out of the plane to check on it and then finds that his tongue is stuck to the wing.
It just happens. Let me just give this thing a lick and see if it's
loose.
Flight worthy.
Yes. If it's not lick worthy, it's not fly worthy.
Yeah. So yeah, that's been my week. The exciting bits of my week. Although I will say, going back to last weekend, I had a friend of mine he's from Charleston, but I met him in Morgantown at the college. He flew out here for a job interview. He got the job. He's like 3 hours north of me. Yeah.
Congratulations to random friend.
Random friend. But so he's moving out here, I think later this month. But he flew out this weekend to check out the area, job interview, all that jazz. And we hung out around Seattle on Saturday. On this whole little tiny tour we were taking of all the scenic spots and stuff, we ended up at KEXP, which was amazing.
Now, for those of us who don't know, tell us what KEXP is.
I'm surprised you didn't know. Like, when we were doing the pre-roll for this episode before we started recording, and I was shocked to find out you didn't seem to know what it was.
Well, I didn't pay attention to things. I still don't pay attention to things. We're recording this episode now, and my eyes are closed.
I just noticed that. I was going to let it roll and not say anything, but I'm like, you know what? You just do you.
Yeah, I'm like so on the verge of sleep right now.
Oh, I feel that. Mm. But KEXP is like the holy grail of college radio in a way. It's affiliated with a college or the university, but it's not the official university radio station. It's just kind of like, the public radio arm of this university, but in a way that they focus on just all the new indie alternative stuff. I mean, it's super awesome. I think it's what every college radio in the country, you know, kind of aspires to be. Now CMJ is gone. They kind of have like KEXP is like the ringleader of.
So essentially, it's become the high flying standard now that the competition has been set so low.
Set well, KEXP's. It's I always thought it was better anyways because CMJ just to me was always a mess, but KEXP's kind of got the vibe of like what CMJ all the good parts of CMJ with the finesse of like NPR and NPR. I don't know, like their facilities, like everything about NPR is very like professional and clean, mm-hmm. and this is just like the indie radio version of that. You know,
they keep a nice tidy home. That's they the do.
Important thing. Well, and we were there. They were remodeling, so they usually give free studio tours and like tours of the building and stuff. But it was closed since they were doing remodels, and it's I think later this month they're going to reopen it. I'm going back up to check it out.
Yeah, it's got to be better than my experience. I once went visited Sirius XM. I went to
in California or somewhere else.
No, and they had the classic vinyl station that broadcasts out of the Rock Hall of Fame in Cleveland.
Oh, okay.
And they have a window into their main studio where you can see the DJs doing their thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked in there, and no one was home. It was broadcasting, but there was not a soul to be found.
That's not a surprise.
So it's got to be at least better than what that experience was.
Mm-hmm. But no, super cool place. You walk in, they have a big thing. They have a big area called the Gathering Space, and on you kind of walk in one door. We walked in like a door from this courtyard. So like you come in the door on your right, you have a stage. Behind the stage is a window into the broadcasting room, into the main studio, which I believe is like a one-way window because you can see in, but there's no way in hell that the person broadcasting can see out.
Which is a good thing. I mean, like...
It'd be so distracting.
Yeah, well, you and me can speak to that. Like, there's nothing worse than DJing and then looking out and seeing people stare at you.
Uh-huh.
Like, it really puts you on the spot because it's one of those things, like, with DJing... It's really like one of those things like, yes, you're on air and you're talking to an audience, but that audience is invisible and they aren't reacting to you. So it always does kind of feel, even if you know people are listening, like you're in your own isolated bubble. And then suddenly, oh, there's a face.
Mm-hmm.
That was why I wanted to go into the radios, because I thought I can be entertaining and not have to show my face to anyone.
Yeah, especially in a place like, for a long time I wanted to get a job, of course, like every other kid who probably wanted to do college radio or radio for a profession while working college radio. Like KEXP was like, that's the place you want to work. And I mean, the amount of people they broadcast to and just the amount of people coming in and out of that space, that public area, because it's like a coffee shop, a record store, art gallery. There's like a lot of stuff in this little space. And there's, you know, probably 100 plus people in there at any given time. I mean, that would be so distracting if you had that in your face the entire time you're trying to broadcast to tens of thousands of people at a time.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
That's a lot to take on, but we went in. My friend and I, he got us some food. He got like a latte. It was like like empanadas, I think is what they were. And he got one. It was like soy sausage of sorts,
mm-hmm.
like some sort of like sausage knockoff. And he got me one that was topales, which is like a type of cactus.
Oh,
like cooked
so.
Cactus. So how good.
Was that?
It was delicious.
I've
it
never
was
heard
weird,
of people
but it was so delicious.
Before.
I know, but it was so delicious.
Very
but anyways,
nice.
Yeah, we went to that space. They at the time we were sitting like eating our food and stuff, and they're playing the radio station overhead, and like you can see the guy broadcasting live whenever they go on the air. But they're like firing off all these songs, and my friend's like, "Oh my god, like that's this and that's this and that's this," and I'm thinking, "Wow, I'm like so disconnected, not with like alternative music, like modern, but I feel like disconnected." Entirely because when I was in college, I felt like I could sit there and be like, oh yeah, like I know this band, I know this song, blah 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 blah. But now I'm just like, I'm sitting here, he's rattling off all this stuff, and I'm just like, I have no idea what all this is about. Like, who's this? What?
Is it hard for you sometimes to keep up with the trends of everything that's popular and happening right now in the music scene?
That's why I got Spotify. It kind of helps me. It makes that just a little bit easier. But no, if we're wanting to transition and talking about new music, one of the songs they played was the new Vampire Weekend song. I don't know if you had a chance to check that out.
I heard maybe the first 30 seconds of it. It's one of those things. I mean, Vampire Weekend to me are a band that's an albums band more so than a singles band. Not saying that they haven't put out some good singles, mainly off their first album, but to me it's one of those things like I'm gonna have to listen to it in context of a grander album piece.
Mm-hmm.
But sounded fine to me. I'm fascinated to see, because their new record, Father of the Bride, is looking like it's going to be coming up later this year. I'm fascinated to see how it turns out, because this is going to be the first album they've put out without their co-founder, Rotsam... Oh, I hope I pronounced this right. Batman Gilege?
I have no idea.
Someone dub in what the correct pronunciation is. But, yeah, like, I know that in between this album, this upcoming album, and their last one, their, like, co-founder of the group left. And that is always a significant change.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm pretty sure Rotsam was, like, their producer on the past three records and was responsible for a lot of those keyboard swells and a lot of the melodic content. It was like a sort of... Ezra Koenig had the lyrics and Rotsam had the music. Mm-hmm. Which was clear to me when I listened to Rotsam's solo record that came out like 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be fascinating to see how it arrives.
Yeah. That song, while we were sitting in that gathering space, they, you know, were like eating our food. They play the song. That comes on the radio. Well, my friend gets super excited about it because he's super into Vampire Week. And then the guy gets on the radio as soon as the song is done, and he is super amped about the song. Like, you can see him like animated in the studio and stuff. And then they play the song again. Just because he liked it that much. Uh-huh. I mean, and then I was like, it's got some catchy parts in it. But then I sat down, listened to it later that day, and I was like, okay, like I'm liking this a lot. And I've not been much of a Vampire Weekend fan before. Just not really, you know, listened to him much.
I've appreciated their work.
Yeah, so it's not like
I think their first album is their best, but a lot of people say that.
Is it the one with like A-Punk, like the big song?
Yeah, A-Punk, okay. And Oxford Comma.
Mm-hmm.
Campus, Mansard Roof. It's the one that has the chandelier on the cover.
Mm-hmm. But see, this is their first album, what, I think, say 6 years? Something like that?
2013 was the last record? 2013, Modern Vampires of the City was their last one. Which Rolling Stone considered the album of the year.
Interesting.
So, I mean, they were on, like, a bit of a uphill thing they were going for, and then suddenly they took, like, most of the decade off.
Mm-hmm.
So... I think it'll be worth checking into what they're doing.
Yeah. We'll say this record comes out. Is it later this month or next month?
It's relatively soon. I'm not sure when it's coming out. I haven't seen a release date yet.
Huh. I'll have to look and see here in a bit.
Tell you what is on the horizon with releases. What's going to be coming out a week from now, actually.
What's up?
This is the new Ariana Grande record.
Oh, man. Yeah, I've heard that's... I don't know if it's just like the people I follow are more into it recently, but it just seems like that album, the hype for it has popped up more in my feed recently.
Well,
I would say it
already kind of went in pre-hype because I don't know if I addressed this earlier in the show or not, and not this episode, but I mean in the show. But definitely one of the big hits toward the end of last year was Thank You Next, the song. And now it's turned out that either in response to that single or maybe already planned, that's the title track of the next album.
Mm-hmm.
Which surprised me because me paying zero attention to a lot of what happens in pop, I thought that song was off of Ariana Grande's last album from last year.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently it was not. But it will be the title track off of this next record. It's coming out next week. There's been a lot of buzz around it. I don't know. I mean, I thought Thank You Next was decent.
Yeah.
I'm against the idea that it's such a grand personal statement when there's like seven credited writers on the song.
I feel like that's the industry though. I mean,
it's very hard. It's one of those things like it becomes the cult of personality, makes everything seem personal when in reality like there's a lot of cooks in that kitchen, and everyone's got a hot plate and they're tossing something around to each other.
Yeah,
so.
I'm going to check it out because I'm trying to think what album it was I listened to. It's an album I didn't expect I would listen to, but kind of got into a while back. It was a Nicki Minaj album.
Mm.
This has been like probably like 4 years ago at this point. I mean, it's been a while back. So I bought it as a gift for my girlfriend. But anyways, whatever record it was, I remember getting like super into it. It was the Pink Print, which is like 2014. So that's, it's a pretty solid album. I like it. But I've not been much for that kind of that's not really my style of music, just hasn't really clicked with me. As good as it is, I think. Seven Rings, I actually haven't had a chance to check out yet. I've seen a lot of people hype up that song, but
I've heard that's something incredible. I've heard that somehow... I saw something earlier today in Rolling Stone that said somehow that song had brought Rodgers and Hammerstein up to the charts.
Interesting.
Which is, I find interesting, but it also kind of clues me in that on what my expectations should be for the record in a bit. So... I don't know. I'm not going to judge anything until the final album comes out. I'm certain I'll try to listen to it when it comes out. But
yeah, see, stuff like this, like, I mean, it probably would have helped to listen to the singles a little more recently so I could have something better to
talk about. Well, think like, of it this way. Then, when it comes out next week, well, we won't be able to talk about it next week unless we immediately listen to that album before we do the show. But we could talk about it next week in our recommendations if we recommend it.
Maybe, I don't know.
In the little review corner we do at the end of the show, we could like say, hey, this came out earlier today, and here's our hot take first impressions.
I want to give it a shot. My usual thing when I listen to new albums is I'll probably, like, the day it comes out, the day it becomes available to me to listen to, I'll usually sit down and listen to the whole thing front to back, and I'll have my opinions at that point, and then I'll take a break for, like, a few days, maybe a week, and then come back to it. Because usually that second time around, I'm a little more appreciative of like some of the more finer, because I can listen to the more finer details of the record. So I might give that a shot with this one, because I'm excited to see, because a lot of people are hyping it up, and then in turn I'm getting hyped up for it. So maybe next week or the week after, once I have a chance to like sit down and properly listen to it, I think it'll be good.
Yeah, I think so. I think it'll be worth our time, investment. Anyway.
Okay. Okay. So. I'll let you introduce this because you probably know a little more about it than I do. But
well, okay, then, Aaron, I don't want to shock you, but did you know that the 60s were 50 years ago?
You said that last week.
Ah, did I? Well.
Yeah.
So.
But still, I mean,
this is the significance of it. So we're taping this on February 1st. 2 days ago, January 30th, marked the 50th anniversary of the Beatles' rooftop concert, their final live performance. Now, for those of you who don't already know, I am a Beatles junkie. I've been a super fan of theirs since I was 3, so I am very well versed in many things Beatles. So, on the 30th, I woke up, looked on Twitter, and saw that a new edit of the Beatles movie Let It Be is going to be produced and directed by Peter Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
So, backstory on this project. Essentially, it's January of 1969. 2 months ago, in November of 1968, the Beatles put out the White Album, which is my personal favorite Beatles record and is their highest-selling album in America. But the sessions were tense, essentially. They weren't awful, but there were some tense moments in the sessions with a lot of people walking out, including their engineer Jeff Emmerich, their producer George Martin, and at one point even their drummer Ringo Starr. And mainly this is because now, after spending a couple months in India meditating with the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, the Beatles have come back together, and they have now, in a sense, almost outgrown each other. They don't realize it yet, but they have.
Mm-hmm.
John is now with his girlfriend Yoko Ono, and he wants to go into a more hard rock, experimental avant-garde direction. Paul wants to focus more on symphonic pop music, and George really just wants more of his songs on the album. And so, finally, the White Album comes out in November of 68, and it's a smash success immediately, bolstered as well by the non-album single that's released with it, Hey Jude, which is hugely successful as well. But the sessions were tense, and now it's January 1969, and Paul McCartney is facing a conundrum, because he realizes, things are tense at the Beatles. What should we do? How can we deflate some of the stuff? And what should be the next thing we do? And he comes up with this idea that the Beatles are going to return to the road. They're going to play live for the first time since 1966. And they're going to compose an album of new material and write it and record it the same way they did in their early days back in 1963, and they are going to create an album that is meant to be performed live, which is in stark contrast to records like Magical Mystery Tour and Sgt. Pepper. This is going to be an album meant to be played live, and to commemorate it, they're going to partner up with a director named Michael Lindsay Hogg, and they're going to film the rehearsals and the sessions of the Beatles trying out new material and then getting their act together and finally culminating in a live performance that will be the end of the project and mark the beginning of the Beatles going back out on the road. The sessions begin at Twickenham Film Studios in London and quickly devolve into arguments. John is now deep in the midst of a heroin addiction, and George is really frustrated because a lot of his compositions, which are later going to end up on his solo album, All Things Must Pass, are being ignored and not given enough attention. And the whole vibe is uncomfortable, and Paul is being over-commanding in how he wants his songs to be played, and finally reaches the point where George Harrison says, "I've had enough," and he walks out on the sessions. After about a week of figuring out what to do, they decide to move shop to the basement of their record label, and instead of rehearsing for a live performance, just make a new album. And the cameras are going to remain there and film everything, but now they're just going to try to make an album where they go back to their roots. And it's going to be called Get Back. And they spend the rest of January essentially recording the bulk of the album, and finally, in order to give the movie that they're making a proper ending, they decide, well, we'll do a live performance on the rooftop of the building. And at that point, the project called Get Back at this point reaches a kind of frustrated end. Glyn Johns, who was engineering the session, is a famed record producer. He did stuff for Led Zeppelin and The Who and The Eagles and The Clash. He is there at the sessions, and he puts together what he views of as a very raw, basic documentary-type album called Get Back. And he gives it to them in May of 1969, and it is rejected by the Beatles and the record label. And the album and the project are shelved for another 6 months. Meanwhile, the Beatles record Abbey Road, and this ends up being their final album. The album comes out, and then in April 1970, Paul officially leaves the group and announces it to the press that he's leaving, and then the Beatles break up. A month later, the album comes out, now produced by Phil Spector. The film comes out, now directed by Michael Lindsay Hogg. They're both called Let It Be. The album is viewed of rather poorly. The critical reception is kind of divided because people feel that Phil Spector overproduced the album. The film is not a huge success. None of the Beatles are there to attend the premiere at all, and it essentially garners a reputation as being 90 minutes of watching the most famous band in the history of pop music argue and break up on the screen. Now, I have seen the Let It Be movie, and yeah, I believe and you seen, have too.
I've seen at some, yeah, God, it's been forever at this point, but yeah.
Now, let me say this. I don't think the movie is as bad as its reputation precedes it to be.
I don't think so, because I think it's a pretty unique snapshot of the band at the time, which I think in itself is what makes it worthwhile to watch.
I think it's worth seeing. I would say that it would be a lie of me not to say that there aren't tense moments in the film, but I think they mark up about 5 minutes all told of the whole 90-minute runtime. The rest of it is really just watching a band jam out on a bunch of rock and roll oldies, and then it ends with the rooftop concert.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if people have a negative reception to the film, it's that it's 90 minutes of watching the most famous prolific band in the world kind of running without a sense of direction.
Yeah.
You know, it's not really them arguing all the time. It's just they clearly don't know what they're doing anymore. And that's what's there on the screen. But now, I'm assuming to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the project, they're going to be putting out a new film version of Let It Be, made up completely of outtakes, things that weren't in the original film, and it's being directed by Peter Jackson, whom film buffs will obviously know from Lord of the Rings. I would say, as a director of films, I would say he's been on a bit of a downturn recently. Lovely Bones wasn't fantastic, and the Hobbit films were like his Star Wars prequels. But he's also... He put out a movie last year that was a documentary on World War One called They Shall Never Grow Old, I believe, is the title of it. And it's a really interesting approach to what he did, because it's on World War One. And World War One is significant in that it was like the first major war documented on film, because it happened in the 1910s, and celluloid had just been invented, so now people could actually film war. But it was all silent film, it was black and white, and the speed is really fast because the frame rate in those days was slower than it is now. And so what he did for this film last year is that he and a team of people colorized the footage, slowed it down to the proper speed, and then dubbed in the sound.
Interesting.
So what you're seeing is footage from 100 years ago that's been... you know, restored to such a point that it almost seems as if it could have been filmed this year. And it's all real. It's like you're actually seeing World War One as if you were really there. And it's quite fascinating. So I'm fascinated to see what approach he takes to the Let It Be sessions.
Yeah, because the original Let It Be movie was... just kind of, I wouldn't say it's a mishmash of clips. It's just the recordings themselves, and all the film was like that was pieced together into a story. There was like no real narrative or anything. Like nobody given like a voiceover or anything additional.
No, it's a fly on the wall type documentary.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if this will be in the same realm, or if it's going to be something, you know, completely different.
I would hope it is. I would hope it's a fly on the wall type documentary.
Yeah, I think that style, especially for this story. And with all the footage and stuff they got, I mean, I feel like that's the proper way to tell the story in the first place.
My impression would be this. Now, more so than ever, we have the 2020 hindsight. So when you're revisiting this footage, anything that seems significant to something that's going to happen later, now you can immediately go, ooh. Like, when you're watching the raw footage, you can be like, ooh, they're talking about this that's going to be happening here later on. You know, when you're in the moment, like, Michael Lindsay Hogg couldn't have possibly known when he was editing together that film, oh, the band's about to break up. Maybe he got a sense of it, but that's not what he was thinking. He was just picking what he thought were the most fascinating parts of the footage. But now we have the 2020 hindsight that we can look at this footage and be like, ooh, that's significant because it's going to lead to that, and it's going to lead to that, and lead to that. You know, so I think there's actually a lot that could be done if they do it just fly on the wall. I mean, I personally like fly on the wall documentaries anyway.
Yeah.
Because I think a documentary at its best just tells the story. I don't need narrators explaining to me the significance. That's actually why I wasn't completely in love with that Doors documentary that came out a few years ago.
Oh, the People Are Strange one?
The People Are Strange.
Johnny Depp narrating?
Yeah, that's the whole movie.
Yeah.
It's like this footage doesn't stand up on its own, so Johnny Depp narrates over every single piece of it. And then it really becomes Johnny Depp's movie more so than the Doors movie.
Yeah.
So my hope would be that if they're going to do it, if they've filmed all this stuff, if it's 55 hours worth of footage that is like literally a whole month of the Beatles, like, rehearsing and writing an album that is now quite beloved by the pop culture, you know, I would say that it would just be fascinating to see it stand on its own.
Yeah.
I actually saw on Twitter, there were some people commenting like, well, I hope they realize that they gave it to Peter Jackson. So when he directs it, it means that they gave him 55 hours of footage and he's going to hand in a 55-hour cut of the movie.
I'm down. I mean, I'll watch
it. I'm down for it, too. I mean, I'm such a giant Beatles fan that I would straight up watch every single piece of raw footage of what they've done. Just because I would love to get a sense that I'm in the studio with them and watching them create my favorite records.
Especially seeing it on the big screen, you know?
Oh, I don't know if it'll be on the big screen. They haven't announced that yet. They haven't announced a release. There's been no release day and no
release schedule.
I would hope it comes to theaters, because not only would the picture be cool on the big screen, just like that sound experience.
I agree with you. I think if here's what I would assume. I could see it getting a limited release in theaters, but I could also see it getting digitally released. Mm-hmm. Because the last Beatles film project that came out like 3 years ago was the film 8 Days a Week, the touring years, mm-hmm. directed by Ron Howard. And the great conceit of that film was that they had all of the fans like send in any like Super 8 footage they had, any like tickets or memorabilia or stuff that they had from their time at those concerts. And so the film was comprised of a lot of fan sent in documents.
Uh-huh.
So they've got in that film like the color footage of Candlestick Park, their Beatles final concert. And that's all like been sent in from fans. Like it's just mm-hmm. fan shot Super 8. It looks like the movie I made for you guys. That got a little limited release in like local theaters, and then the main release was on Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see it potentially getting like maybe a Netflix or a Hulu release.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what my bet is that the past 2 years we've seen a bunch of 50th anniversary editions come out. 2017 gave us the Sgt. Pepper remix and box set. Last year gave us the White Album remix and box set. I'm placing my bets that we're going to be seeing an Abbey Road one this year. There's no question in my mind. Yeah. I can only assume that then this will come out 2020 and mark the 50th anniversary of Let It Be. And it will come out in a box set of the album, which hopefully will finally see the release of the original Glyn Johns mix of the mm-hmm. record. So that way people don't have to keep looking for it on bootlegs.
Is it even available out there?
What, the Glyn Johns mix?
Yeah.
It's on bootlegs. It's floating around in corners of the internet. You can find it.
Because the only thing I know about that record is there's the Phil Spector release, and then there's the it's like Let It Be, Naked, like the.
So I mean, the album is a story in and of itself. There were two versions made by Glyn Johns, and they were both called Get Back.
Mm-hmm.
Then Phil Spector, after working with John Lennon on Instant Karma, was given the rights to edit it together as Let It Be.
Mm-hmm.
Paul McCartney hated it. And then in 2003, he made his own remix called Let It Be Naked.
Yeah.
And in between all of those different mixes and performances and material, there is the perfect version of the Let It Be album. Because I don't think any of them are fantastic. Mm-hmm. I think the Glyn Johns mixes, both of them, are a bit too undercooked. There's a lot of performances that are like rough takes and rehearsals. Some songs just straight up don't end. They like just stop because someone hits a wrong note and then the performance just breaks down. And that was supposed to be an official Beatles album. And it's like his version is undercooked. Spector's is overcooked. He ruined Long and Winding Road by putting all those strings and choir on it. I don't know what he did to Across the Universe and why it's all slowed down and overdramatic. So his version is overcooked, though he does find the perfect performances of all the songs.
Mm-hmm.
And McCartney stripped away a lot of Spector's production, but he then remixed the tapes as well, and it sounds really sterile to me. Like, the Let It Be Naked remix to me sounds really overly clean
mm-hmm.
and just... It's too tidy. It needs a little bit of grime with it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what... It cut away extraneous bits like their rendition of Maggie May and the jam song Dig It, which were, I think, actually important to the record because they gave it a bit of a sense of humor, which the McCartney remix just doesn't have. So
mm-hmm.
in between all of those, there is the perfect version of the album, which I've created. And... I'll send it to you, Aaron, after this tape
down for that. Is done. Yeah.
You can hear my version of that album and hear it in all of its splendor. But my guess is that what's going to happen is that next year we're going to see two things. We're going to see a box set of the Let It Be sessions and the remix and another remix done by Giles Martin. That will be like a mixture blend of the two. We'll be seeing, in conjunction with that, a Blu-ray release of the new Peter Jackson film, partnered with it is going to be the original Michael Lindsay Hogg cut of Let It Be.
Mm-hmm.
And then either as a special feature on those Blu-rays or whatever they're going to be, we'll see, I'm certain, a full edit of the Rooftop Concert.
Mm-hmm.
That's my guess. Because that would be the way Apple would roll it out. Now, how they're going to screen the film, I could see it getting a theatrical release, but I also could see it then getting a Blu-ray release and be partnered with the original Let It Be film.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think they've already said that after the Peter Jackson cut comes out, then they're going to release the Michael Lindsay Hogg version again. Which will be nice, because it hasn't been put out on home media since like a rough VHS copy of in the 80s.
Yeah, I think so, like even the copy you gave me a while back was pretty just weird in terms of quality.
Yeah, it kind of jumped all over the place. So, I mean, I'm excited for it. I think Let It Be is one of those records that gets kind of unfairly treated because it either falls in between the White Album and Abbey Road or it falls after Abbey Road. And I mean, to go from the very well-produced splendor of Abbey Road to the very rough-edged Let It Be is hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
Or even to go from the all-expensive expanse of the White Album into the hard-edged Let It Be is hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always the black sheep of the Beatles discography if we're discounting the Yellow Submarine soundtrack. And but I think it's worth overlooking. I'm looking forward to what comes out of it.
Yeah, me too.
Right, there. So I did my spiel on that.
All right, so
I told you beforehand that I could go on about those things for hours.
Oh, I know. It's a textbook. You're just a living textbook of the Beatles.
It's my job. It's my role.
Somebody's got
to
do it.
I still need to make a part three to my fake Beatle albums video. Because I did a part one and a part two, and they're both outdated. I need to do a part three. So, anyway.
Okay, so what are you listening to?
Well,
recently, or what are you not even listening to? Just any what sort of media are you consuming?
Oh, I consume all sorts of things. I'll tell you what record I was listening to earlier today.
What's that?
I was listening to the Genesis album "The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway."
Mm-hmm.
Now, I feel like a lot of people everywhere equate Genesis as Phil Collins and two other blokes. I know definitely in America they do. But before Phil Collins' rise to power, there was another singer in Genesis. His name was Peter Gabriel. And he, in later years, pretty much helped change the landscape of, well, sound recording in general.
Uh-huh.
But originally, he was the front man of Genesis. And originally, Genesis was not a pop group who sang about how they couldn't dance and how women had invisible touches. Instead, they were a very heavy prog rock band,
mm-hmm.
along the likes of Yes and Emerson, Lake and Palmer and Pink Floyd, though they weren't as spacey as the Floyd. And The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway is their final album with Peter Gabriel. It's the final album of the first lineup, the prog rock lineup.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is just simply superb. It's a hard album to get into as a first time. It's one of those things like Aaron was talking about earlier in the show. Like, you have to listen to that album multiple times to really get into it. Because it's split. It's a rock opera that is about a Puerto Rican immigrant named Rael, who's on the streets of New York. And he goes on this strange pilgrim's progress journey that ends in his own kind of self-discovery.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say this, the story never makes any sense, but the music that is contained within this record is just simply great. It's a double album. The first record is kind of 10 hard rock songs that kind of point the way towards Gabriel's solo career, but with a prog edge to them as well.
Mm-hmm.
The second album is a bit more instrumental. It's a bit more atmospheric. It's where a lot of just long passages of like scenery would happen in the live show and all this sort of stuff. I think it's worth a listen. It's on Spotify. It just finally got released on Spotify now, because it was off Spotify for a while. It's available most immediately in a remixed version from 2007. I would say try to spot out the original 1974 mix if you can. It'll be harder to find, but it's a superb record, and I think just simply one of the best examples of, like, hard prog rock you could find out there.
Sounds like a fun time.
Oh, I think it's great. It's something you need to really let sit with you for a while to get into it, but I think that that's what makes it rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of early Genesis albums are like that.
Yeah.
And then a lot of later Genesis albums are like, she seems to have an invisible touch. And it's just Phil Collins, like, in, like, doing his Phil Collins thing.
Yeah.
So what about you? What have you been listening to, Aaron?
Well, this is completely unrelated to music or anything else we talked about recently.
Oh, so. Well, then, let us have it.
This is actually it's a podcast I listened to a while back, and I keep coming back to it because it's just fun to listen to. It's like, I think it's only like 10 episodes, something like that. Yeah, it's it's a podcast produced by Marvel. Yeah, it's like it's called Wolverine: The Long Night. It's basically just this 10-part show of Wolverine in Alaska, and it's telling the story of like this cult and like shady business going on. I don't know. I don't want to give away too much. It's just it's like watching a Marvel, an MCU film inside. I mean, it's all on a podcast, just cram storyline, all these characters. Just, I mean,
now that's fascinating. I didn't even know that was a thing that Marvel was embarking on. I didn't know Marvel was doing.
Well, this podcasts. Is as far as I know, this is like the very first time they've ever done something like this. And based on just this one show, I don't know. I like I said, I want to talk about it so bad, but I don't want to give away any plot points because there's just so much entailed with it.
Well, there's a way to do a review of something without spoiling it.
Okay, I'll try to give away as much as I can without ruining any parts of the story. But basically, yeah, it's like these two agents. Like, I don't know if they're not FBI, they're superhero agents of some sort. You know, dealing with that sort of thing in the universe. But anyways. They go to this little town called Burns, Alaska, and they're trying to solve, I think they're trying to solve a murder or something. Yeah. Solve this string of murders that's been happening, and, you know, it gets tied up that Wolverine's, he happens to be in the area. Then there's this big backstory with, like, how he got there and, like, why he's there in the first place. And it's absolutely bonkers. It's so cool to listen to. It was like you had to pay for it for the longest time, but that they finally made it for free a few months ago. So, yeah, it's called Wolverine: The Long Night. It's like, I think it's on every podcast platform. It's so worth listening to.
Very interesting. Yeah, I'm gonna have to talk to my comic book friends about that.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure.
Or friend. So,
if comic book friend is into comic books, I'm gonna say that they would quite enjoy this show because
you hear that, John? You better be getting on the ball.
AKA comic book friend.
AKA comic book friend. AKA co-creator of fan fiction drinking games and someone who I haven't hid away from my other work at all. He's actually comic book friend and I are just about to kick off our playthrough of Spider-Man on the PlayStation 4.
Oh, I'm excited for that
weekend. That's coming out. Well, by the time this is out, it'll already be out. For you and me, it's coming out tomorrow.
Nice.
And you're actually making a cameo in the new episode of SpongeBob.
Isn't it the last episode of SpongeBob, or is it just a episode?
It's a episode of SpongeBob. It's not the last one.
An episode. Yeah.
You're going out on Sunday, which is going to be 2 days ago from the time this gets released. So
yeah, so everyone can see my beautiful face.
His beautiful face. He did a nice little cameo when I found out that an episode was running too short.
Hey, the beauty. I shot that on my phone, too.
I'm going to have to get you to tape another thing, but luckily I don't need it till like the end of March.
Oh, yeah, you told me about that. Okay, just text me whenever, and I'll get it done.
I'll probably do it next week or something. Okay, I have to start messaging everyone I know and being like, hey, this is a stupid sketch I'm doing.
All right, you ready to wrap it up?
I say I'm ready to wrap it up.
Okay, this is the Juke Joint hosted by me, Aaron, and Jacob Whitmer over there on the other side of the microphone.
On the other side of the country.
But you can subscribe to us on your podcast platform of choice. Don't forget to not just subscribe, but to leave us a rating and review on whatever service it is you're using. You can give us some feedback. Tell us what you like, what you don't like about the show, because we want to make this as best as we can. All the links to our social media, both Whitmer's and myself, you can find in the show description. And Jacob, is there anything you want to add?
No.
Okay, well, onward? Onward, I guess.
Onward and upward.
Well, I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I've hoped we've passed the audition.
Thanks, Mo.
See you next week.